Good afternoon, Jason. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ilan. Nice to be with you.
Jason Squire is a professor of the practice of cinema arts at USC and is known as an expert in the area, comes from the industry years and years back, was the editor of the movie business book, and which has been in four different, I think, editions at this point, right, Jason?
Yes, there's a brand new edition. That's the fourth edition, right, from Routledge.
Right. That also is, by the way, a Chinese edition, which has been put together with the assistance of the Beijing Film Academy. We are here to talk today with Jason about the 2020 Entertainment Crystal Ball, or in other words, Jason Squire's 2020 Entertainment Crystal Ball. So as we look at 2020, we are looking for your key predictions of what may happen in the coming year, particularly with respect to film and television. So Jason, why don't we get things started with perhaps the first topic?
Sure. We should mention that there has been so much upheaval this year. For heaven's sake, the shifting tides on the studio level, the fact that we have one less major studio, Fox being absorbed by Disney, but also we need to add to the studio hierarchy Netflix and Amazon. So it may be a wash. There are these new players, and you know they are being included in the studio definition by virtue of the level of money that they are spending on original content. So we can turn to a related topic. All the consumers are focused on the streaming wars, which are just about to begin only because Apple TV has launched, Disney Plus has launched, Apple TV Plus, BET Plus, between September and November, each offering monthly subscriptions. And next year, we look forward to the debut, April 6th, of Quibi, the Katzenberg mobile-only expression that will be $4.99 with ads, $7.99 without. And later in April, NBCU's Peacock is expected to be released in May 2020, HBO Max from Warner Media. And later in 2020, Discovery BBC, which has not announced a release date yet. So all of these players will be battling for subscribers. And in my opinion, it's going to get awfully bloody before it's going to take another 2 years for all of this to settle down.
Wow. So this is going to get heated in the coming year.
In my opinion, in the battle for subscribers, which is very personal, a lot of people dropping out, trying it again, glomming on to friends' subscriptions, deciding whether the dollars are worth the time spent. And it's generational. This will not be as big an issue for the cable subscribers, even though they're cutting their cords at a strong pace. The younger audience is choosing among all of these various streaming platforms, and it's just too early to tell. It'll take another year before people really are fixed on their choices, and another 2 years before it will settle out. I think there will be winners and losers, and the crystal ball says, let me take another look. Oh, there. The crystal ball says that there are likely to be fewer players in the arena after 2 years.
Okay, great. We'll have to check again in a year and see. There we are.
Right.
Thank you. So going on to your perhaps second prediction.
Yes. This concerns the war between the talent agents and the Writers Guild, where since April, they have been battling it out in connection with the as yet unsigned artist-manager basic agreement, which is the document that they have been following for years. This is between the ATA, Association of Talent Agents, and WGA, Writers Guild of America. They are simply at opposite sides on this, mostly because the packaging fees and also the rising trend of agencies working with what they call affiliated producers who happen to be owned by the agency's parent companies. WGA sees this as a threat to individual representation of their writer clients. They have still not, you know, it might result in the courts. In fact, there's a later prediction about the Justice Department that just weighed in on the side of the big agencies, which I think is a mistake. We'll get into that in a moment. But let me take a look and see, shine up the old crystal ball on this one. Uh-oh, it says that the stalemate will just get worse and will be prolonged. So it looks like it may have to be settled in the courts.
Oh my goodness, okay. So on to the next one.
I don't know why it's so warlike this year, the war between ATA and WGA. WGA is also at the forefront of a potential bit of friction because in May, the contract is up with the governing management entity, which is the AMPTP, the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. Their three-year contract comes up in May. This happens with the other guilds also. Generally, the writers go first and then the others follow. So the question is whether there might be friction even leading to a strike. The last strike we had was for 100 days, Elon, in 2007 to 8. They almost struck the last in 2014. So what's happening is based on the reading I've done is the studios are stockpiling screenplays and they're rushing to make deals on delivery of literary material before the strike deadline. Let's have a look at the crystal ball on this one. It seems as though the crystal ball is telling us that they will settle. It's unlikely there will be a strike, and things will move on.
Oh, good. We have one positive prediction so far.
That's right. That's right.
All right, on to your next prediction.
Yes, okay. So we have what I would call Department of Justice meddling, otherwise known as the DOJ weighing in on various conflicts in different industries. So as mentioned, they did go public on the difficulties, the conflict between the agents and the writers, but they landed on the wrong side, in my opinion. They landed on the side of the big agencies. Agencies really don't need much more help. They're very powerful. They can handle this in some way. But there was also a couple of stories that reinvoked the Paramount consent decrees. So this is an industry issue, a legal issue that was settled by the Supreme Court in 1948. And back in the day, as we all recall, many studios owned theaters, so they were vertically integrated, managing production, distribution, and exhibition, deemed at the time to be potentially monopolistic. And so the issue made its way through the court system. And finally, the Supreme Court decided in favor of independent theaters and invoked the consent decrees that the theater-owning studios had to sign. It was also known as divorcement, which led to the separation of the theater ownership from production and distribution. Now, the Justice Department last year in 2018 announced that they were reviewing some 1,300 consent decrees and that they were going to become involved in, of all things, this issue in support of ending the Paramount consent decrees. Now, we have to mention that there was some onerous distribution, meaning studio practices back in the day that did result in the Paramount case, including block booking, which was bundling all the movies of one studio into one theater license for a full year. Today, of course, it's picture by picture as a result of this case. And there was an issue of setting minimum prices on movie tickets. Another issue about clearances, which have to do with exclusive film licenses for specific geographic areas. And that also has been shifted so that there is much more equity about clearances, so that theaters don't have big competitors in their own geographic area. Now, the DOJ announced they were going to become involved in this issue and come down on the side of ending the Paramount case. And in my opinion, this will happen. The results, you know, the question is, what will the results be? And you just take a peek at the crystal ball, and it's bright and shiny and clear now, because it seems like really nothing will change. Nothing will change. And the real mystery,
okay,
you know, the real mystery is, why is the DOJ getting involved in some of these entertainment industry issues where, you know, things can be very well settled by the smart parties on their own.
Okay.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Great. I do have one quick question for you around 5G. Do you see any movement this coming year around 5G, or is this more of a long play?
Well, it is a long play, but I do see some movement. So Verizon was first at bat, having and has the benefit of all of this advertising to separate themselves from their competitor providers. And you know, AT&T and T-Mobile are gearing up to offer the higher speed broadband. This will take time, because remember, the slowest, most labor-intensive part, similar to cable, is known as the last mile, which is from a given station to your home. And, you know, that's going to take an awful lot of money and time, and Verizon got there first. Other countries have been more active in, you know, gearing up for 5G than the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. The capital required for that one remaining mile is monumental, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we'll have to just keep an eye on that and see how it develops in the coming year. So your crystal ball may not be clear just yet.
And there's another beat. You know, by the time this gets settled, some new technology may come along and disrupt everything. That's going to be fun if that happens.
Yeah. Well, with that, I think we're going to conclude our discussion and see how things develop in the coming year. We will be checking in with you, Jason, and we thank you for your insight.
It's always a pleasure to chat with you, Elon. Thank you so very much.